Welcome to the Physics Audio Tutorial Series by Rapid Learning Center. In this audio tutorial, we will discuss vectors and kinematics in two dimensions. This core tutorial will introduce you to kinematics in two dimensions. This means you will be able to discuss motion in two different directions. Tutorial objectives. By completing this course, you will understand vectors and scalars, complete basic vector operations, describe motion in two dimensions, and calculate various quantities involving projectile motion. The concept map of vectors and kinematics in 2D would show that vectors and math skills help describe motion. This motion could be a constant velocity or constant acceleration. Your kinematics equations also help describe these motions. Both of these motions and all of these tools can also apply in two dimensions. Vectors and scalars. It's important to be able to distinguish between a vector and a scalar. Vector definition. Any measurement or quantity can be categorized in one of two types. A vector is a quantity that has magnitude or size and direction. Examples would be velocity, displacement, and acceleration. They all possess a direction. A scalar, on the other hand, is a quantity that has only magnitude or size. Examples would be speed, distance, temperature, and mass. They have no directions. Vector examples. All of the following measurements involve magnitude and direction, thus they're vectors. 10 meters per second east, negative 9.8 meters per second squared indicates a downward direction, or 50 meters per second at 30 degrees above the horizontal. In each of these, a direction is specified. Vector notation. Due to their directional nature, vectors are usually drawn with arrows to signify their direction. Thus, an arrow pointing up might signify up or to the north. Occasionally, they are also drawn to scale, similar to the scale on maps. A centimeter might stand for a meter of distance. Textbook notation. In textbooks, vectors must be distinguished from scalars. This can be accomplished in a variety of ways. A vector is usually abbreviated by a letter that identifies it as a vector. Say, the letter A would represent vector A. This A could be drawn as a bold letter, a letter with an arrow above it, or just a line above it. All of these indicate that A is a vector. Scalars. All of the following measurements involve only a size or magnitude. They have no direction. 10 seconds, 15 kilograms, 35 miles per hour. None of these possess a direction, thus they're scalars. Vector addition. In order to add vectors, certain rules must be followed. Scalar addition. Just as scalars can be added, say, like 2 plus 2 equaling 4, vector quantities can be added. However, their rules are slightly different. A vector of 2 and a vector of 2 does not necessarily equal 4. Vector addition rule. When vectors are graphically added, they are drawn head to tail. This may also be described as placing the arrow head of one vector next to the tail end of another vector. Thus, if we were adding vector A plus vector B, we would place one arrow directly after the next arrow. Resultant. When these vectors are added in this way, the sum, or resultant, is drawn from the tail of the first vector to the tip of the last one. So when vector A and B are added together, our answer C goes from the beginning of A to the end of B. That's our resultant. calculation of this resultant. Mathematics can be used to calculate the magnitude and/or direction of the resultant. For example, to get the magnitude, use the Pythagorean theorem. C squared equals a squared plus b squared. This can also be written as c equals the square root of a squared plus b squared. So, if we have vectors a and b perpendicular to each other to form a right triangle, when we take the square of 2 and add it to the square of 2, we get the square root of 8, which is approximately 2.83 meters. Direction of the resultant. Simple trig functions can be used to calculate the direction of our resultant or answer. Back to our right triangle. If we're looking for an angle, we can use trig functions, like say tangent, to find an angle. Tangent's opposite over adjacent, so if we have the opposite side, our b vector, and the adjacent side, our a vector, if we divide them and get 1, if we take the inverse tangent of that 1, we get 45 degrees. That's an angle which can describe the direction of our resultant. Vectors added in a line. Sometimes vectors are added along the same line. This simplifies things greatly. For example, say an airplane is flying west at 400 miles an hour. We will call this direction positive. So if a headwind blowing in the opposite direction, east, at 50 miles an hour, we must consider that negative. Adding these vectors tip to tail gives a resultant, or final speed of the airplane, at plus 350 miles per hour. Multiple vectors added. When multiple vectors are added, they are still drawn head to tail. We could draw any number of vectors going up, down, sideways, or diagonally. As long as we draw all of them tip to tail, our resultant still goes from the beginning of the first to the end of the last. Motion in two dimensions. Often, objects don't move at nice, neat angles. They move at all sorts of directions. There are ways to simplify these situations. Diagonal motions. A cannon is fired at some angle with the horizontal. It's fired diagonally. This diagonal motion could be simplified by showing its motion only in the horizontal direction and only in the vertical direction. These two vectors are called components. Vector component definition. The parts into which a vector can be separated and that act in different directions from the vector. In our cannon example, we're describing the horizontal and vertical motions of the cannonball. Swimming across a river. Swimming across a river involves motion in two separate perpendicular directions. The river current going one direction, and the swimmer's effort to make it across the river moving perpendicular to that. The resultant velocity of the swimmer takes a diagonal path. The swimmer will actually be moving in both of the directions. Projectile motion. A projectile is any object moving through the air or space that is only acted on by gravity. We will be neglecting air resistance here. Projectile examples. A projectile could take many forms. A cannonball, a high-jumping athlete, or a ball thrown through the air. Classic projectile question. A ball is dropped vertically and one is launched horizontally, each from the same height. Which one hits the ground first? You might be surprised to find out that they will both hit the ground at exactly the same time. The explanation. Why does it work this way? Well, they both hit the ground at the same time because they both fall the same vertical distance. Although the thrown one has an extra additional horizontal motion, that doesn't affect its vertical motion. So, Breaking objects' motions into horizontal and vertical components can be very useful. Further explanation. In this example, in the vertical direction, both of the objects experience the usual acceleration from gravity, negative 9.8 meters per second squared. If we were to take snapshots of the falling ball, either one of them, we would note increasing falling distance vertically, and the speed would be increasing in the vertical direction. However, if we took snapshots of either object horizontally, specifically the one being fired horizontally, the projected ball has a constant velocity. Thus, it covers regular, consistent, horizontal distances. No acceleration here. Thought question. At the same time that a high-speed bullet is fired horizontally from a rifle, another bullet is simply dropped from the same height. Which bullet strikes the ground first? Consider how this example might be similar to our previous one. Although it seems unlikely, and maybe even unrealistic, if we could see far, far downrange, we would notice that they both hit the ground at exactly the same time. Thought question explanation. Why does it work this way? Once again, both fall the same vertical distance and are accelerated the same by gravity. Thus, their times would be equal. The fired bullet simply has a very large extra horizontal component. This makes it move sideways. This is usually never observed, since it would require a very large flat open area. This probably contributes to why this question seems so unusual or difficult. The monkey and the hunter. Again, a classic physics question. A big game hunter spots a monkey in a tree and aims directly at him. If the monkey releases the branch exactly as the hunter fires the bullet, approximately where will the bullet land? Consider motion in both directions. Monkey explanation. You might think that the bullet would go above the monkey since the monkey is falling. However, the bullet is falling too, with the same vertical acceleration also. Since they're in the air for the same amount of time, the bullet actually hits right at the target. It drops as much as the monkey drops. Formulas. There are no new mathematical formulas for this topic. However, all the old formulas for motion in one dimension still apply and will be very useful. Projectile example. A cannon fires a ball from the top of a 50 meter high cliff. The cannonball is fired at 100 meters per second. How far away from the base of the cliff will it land? Projectile solution. When only the vertical direction is considered, here are some things we need to remember. Its initial vertical velocity is zero. The distance it travels is negative 50 meters, that's down. Its acceleration is negative 9.8 meters per second squared. And its time in the air is unknown. This may be similar to one of our old kinematic problems when we consider only the vertical direction. So let's use an old formula, d equals vit plus at squared over 2. However, the distances and velocities will only be in the vertical direction. Mathematics of solution. If we use that formula, d equals vit plus at squared over 2, we'll notice that the vi is 0, which makes our math a lot easier. When we rearrange or solve it for t, we need to make sure that we put that vertical distance in, that negative 50 from the problem. Ultimately, this gives us a time of 3.2 seconds for the cannonball to hit the ground. This isn't our final answer, but it will lead us to our final answer. Obtaining the horizontal distance. When only the horizontal motion of the projectile is considered, we need to remember a few things again. Since gravity acts only vertically, there is zero acceleration horizontally. Horizontally, the projectile moves with a constant speed. We can use one of our previous kinematic formulas again. V equals d over t. The v and the d we're using here are the horizontal motions. More mathematics of solution. So if we continue to use this formula and solve for distance, we can input our time, our horizontal velocity of 100, do our math carefully, and we'll get a horizontal distance of 320 meters. This is the distance that the cannonball goes from the bottom of the cliff. Projectiles at an angle. Again, a projectile is fired at 100 meters per second. This time, there's no cliff. But the barrel is elevated at 30 degrees with the ground. That means it's 30 degrees up. How far away will this projectile land? Separate into components. We must resolve the diagonal motion of this cannonball into horizontal and vertical components. These separate components will be used when motion in only one direction is addressed. Calculation of components. Consider the cannonball velocity and its components like the sides of a right triangle. The cannonball's motion is the hypotenuse. The horizontal component is the adjacent side. The vertical motion is the opposite side. And our angle theta, or 30 degrees, is with the cannonball's movement. To find these component values, for the vertical component, we're looking for the opposite side of the triangle. So we'll use the sine function. Sine equals opposite over hypotenuse. We'll solve for the opposite side and get 50 meters per second. Now for the horizontal component, which is the adjacent side, we'll use the cosine function because cosine equals adjacent over hypotenuse. When we solve for the adjacent side, we'll get 87 meters per second. Calculating time in the air. We now know that the cannonball initially moves upward at 50 meters per second. This is the vertical component. Thus, it will be moving downwards at negative 50 meters per second when it finally returns to Earth. We can use our old acceleration formula once again. A equals vf minus vi over t. This time, we're looking for t. We know the acceleration, negative 9.8 meters per second squared. With our final velocity of minus 50 and our initial velocity of 50, we get a time of approximately 10.2 seconds. This is the time that our cannonball is in the air. Calculating the distance traveled. Finally, since we still have a constant horizontal velocity, we can use our old constant horizontal velocity formula. V equals distance over time. We're looking for the distance, so we want to take time times velocity. We have a time of 10.2 seconds, which we calculated, and we have our horizontal velocity of 87 meters per second, which we calculated. This gives us our final horizontal distance of 887 meters. This is the distance that the cannonball will move along the ground before it finally hits. Additional formula. With some algebraic acrobatics, our previous example can be combined and simplified into one formula to determine the horizontal range of a projectile. That is, d equals v squared times the sine of 2 theta divided by g. Theta is the angle of launch measured from the horizontal. G is our acceleration from gravity, and our v is our launch speed. Launches at various angles. If we were to examine a graph which shows vertical distance and horizontal distance of a projectile, we would see how two angles can yield the same horizontal distance. These two angles are complementary. They add up to 90 degrees. The difference is The larger angle of each pair simply puts the projectile higher into the air and for a longer amount of time. This is true with any pair of complementary angles. Without air resistance, an angle of 45 degrees will yield the maximum range, maximum distance traveled along the ground. Summary. Vectors have magnitude and direction. Scalars have magnitude only. When we add vectors, be sure to add them tip to tail. The resultant is the sum of any two or more vectors. When we split vectors into components, of course we'll use math, specifically trigonometry. And don't forget, use the appropriate component when describing motion in a certain direction. If you're describing horizontal motion, use the horizontal velocity and/or horizontal distance. For all of these problems, be sure to use our old kinematics formulas. Congratulations on successfully completing the Vectors and Kinematics in 2 Dimensions Core tutorial. For more audio and visual tutorials in chemistry, biology, physics, and math, go to www.rapidlearningcenter.com. Thank you.